Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
Phase 0, episode number 38 is live. Let's do it. Welcome to the MCU show. I'm your host, Brandon Davis. The Fantastic Four is all here, joined today by Jenna Anderson.
Hey, everybody.
We got Jamie Jurak.
Good morning.
We got Aaron Perrine.
What's going on, y'all?
Woo, feeling energized. I don't know why. That 5-minute music just gets me pumped up. I'm not going to lie. During that 5-minute intro music, which the podcast listeners will never experience because it's only on the live show, I had to run over, like, fix my hair so I didn't look like a total slob on today's show. Came back, sat down, felt good, ready to talk about Venom. Got big news. Andy Serkis is on the podcast next week. We have a half-hour interview with Venom, Let There Be Carnage director Andy Serkis. He also plays Alfred in the Batman. He's also Gollum in Lord of the Rings. He was Richard Nealand in 13 going on 30. That's why you're here. But he's also Ulysses Klaue. So we're going to talk about it all, and I'm very excited about that. At the end of today's show, we're going to talk about What If Episode 8. Spoilers, so we're going to save it for the end. And we have some MCU news to get through. So without further ado, I want to start with Venom reactions. And Jamie, who should go first here? Do you want me to go first? You go. I'm going to go first. Oscar Isaac here. Who talks first? You talk first. I talk first.
It's all you.
Talk first. Okay. Venom, Let There Be Carnage. It's a movie. So listen. I'm really conflicted on this one because the first Venom, when I got out of it, I didn't really like it. A couple years have gone by. It's grown on me a lot. This new one, there's things I like. And overall, I'm kind of like, it feels messy and rushed, which is weird because they had a lot of time to get this movie right. So I don't really know if something happened, if it was weird, but it was like Tom Hardy as Eddie and Venom is fantastic. I think we get a lot more from Anne this time. Well, we don't get a lot of Anne, but what we do get of Anne, I really like. I thought she was really like a valuable character. I want more of her. And I think that's my biggest problem with this movie is that all of the characters that are interesting, that are not named Eddie or Venom, I want more of them. And the movie is so fast that it doesn't give you time to really spend time with them in super meaningful ways. Carnage looks amazing. The action with Carnage is very cool. Cletus Kasady, I thought was kind of cheesy. I would say the same for Shriek. But overall, like, I think Marvel fans are going to go. They're going to watch it. It would fit into like the era of movies that came out in the early 2000s. If you liked the first Venom, I think you're going to like this one. If you didn't, I think you're not. And I just think it's not going to get any superlatives for being the best movie. I don't think it's going to get superlatives for being the worst movie. I think it's a movie. It's Venom. Venom is very cool. Carnage is very cool. I would have liked to see more dynamics between certain characters, a deeper look at certain characters. And I'm the last person, I think, to say I want R-rated movies, but I do think this one would have benefited from taking things a little, not cutting where it cuts on a lot of things, and going a little further. But also, I mean, the post-credit scene is wish fulfillment. It's awesome. And like, if you stay through the credits, like that is worth the price of admission alone, I think, which is so weird to think about, to say. But I think that by the time, you know, you get to the end of this movie, you'll enjoy that post-credit scene very thoroughly and be very excited for the future. And I do want more Venom. Like, this movie does have me wanting more Venom. It has me also wishing for more Carnage. But just with, I don't know, maybe a different style. But overall, I don't hate it. I don't love it. It's where I'm at. Jamie?
Yeah, I think you really like hit the nail on the head with like it's not terrible. It's not great. It's just a movie that exists. It's just a movie that is now out in the universe. And I'm somebody. See, I think I'm going to be in the minority on this one where I really liked the first Venom, and so I was like, yeah, this is going to be my thing. We're getting more of this, and I was really disappointed. I it just it's fine. And but like you know, you brought up this like mysterious credit scene. What's it going to be? Everyone's teasing it, and it's like that should not be the only thing people are talking about. That's like not what makes a good movie. That's like what makes a good like tweet, you know. And I'm a big Woody Harrelson fan. Like your girl's got a Cheers tattoo, so I was really stoked for him and I thought that all fell really flat. I didn't really care what was going on. I agree, Michelle. I wanted more because people talk about why she doesn't do much in the first one. I'm writing our official comicbook.com review today. It's going up tomorrow. And like, I'm bummed that I can't like get excited about writing this because I don't like to be negative. So that's where I'm at. But it's not terrible. It's like, it's up to worse, you know, it's just not exciting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I there were things that I liked, like overall, I think the movie is like just very okay. But there are like, I think we've talked about some of the negative things we want to see more of, but I like to keep it positive. And there are positives. I really think that like Eddie and Venom is hilarious. Tom Hardy's commitment to this role is just astounding. The movie is campy and ridiculous, and he commits to every bit of it for better or worse, which is usually for better, because if he was anywhere and not committed, it would just pull you right out and it would just be awful. So I mean, hats off to Tom Hardy for bringing Eddie Brock to life and establishing this dynamic between Eddie and Venom, because it is the most fun part of the movie. And it so desperately makes me want more. This movie desperately made me want to see Venom come face to face with Deadpool in a movie. I think the banter there would be hilarious. I think it would be just fantastic. The action sequences are much better than the first movie, in my opinion. I think Carnage vs. Venom is pretty cool. I like how Andy Serkis chose to have like the full frame taken up to show the size of these characters, to capture their scale. And Carnage is menacing. I would have liked to see him be a bit more menacing, and I would have liked to see Cletus get just feel more intimidating. It's fine. It's, you know, I'm very excited to see what people think of it, because, you know, people went to the premiere and loved it. A lot of people saw it early and loved it. And I'm curious, like people who go to regular screenings over the weekend, what they're going to think, because I remember when the first Venom came out and all the critics ripped it. And I was one of the critics who was like, yeah, you have some good stuff, but you got to change a lot to make a good movie. And they kept the good stuff, and they just kind of changed the other stuff with other stuff that I don't think was great. But a lot of people love that first one. Jamie, it's interesting to hear you say you didn't like it, or you did like the first one, but you didn't love this one. So
it should be noted that I came to the first one late. I didn't see the first one in theaters. So by the time I watched it, no one was talking about it anymore. I got to kind of come into it very fresh and clean. And maybe that has something to do with it. I think that both movies are a circumstance thing. Like kind of like when you watch a comedy, like I was a little tired. Maybe that's why I didn't like it. But you shouldn't have that much pressure on yourself. Movies shouldn't be that hard. But I think that has something to do with it. Like, I don't know, maybe be a little toasty before you go in. Well, you know, like maybe that'll help.
Yeah, if you're in a place where you can do that, we encourage it. I think that's it for Venom Talk. We'll have the full review from Jamie on comicbook.com tomorrow morning. And we have Andy Serkis on the podcast to dive into it. We will have maybe some preview of that interview over the weekend, maybe dive into the post-credit scene to share with you over the weekend. I'll have a full breakdown video on the comicbook.com YouTube channel. And I see everybody in the comment section. We did get to send, I think, like 50 people to the screenings in New York and LA from our Phase Zero audience to go see the movie early. And it looks like they all had a blast. So I'm really happy we were able to make that happen. But Jenna, Aaron, was there anything you guys wanted to talk about on this? Because I know you guys haven't seen it yet.
People in the comments are asking, and I am kind of curious too, how is the new Eminem song?
It's certainly no venom. I think that's just a classic. You can't top it, but it's good. It's you know, Eminem drops some bars in the credits, so yeah, it's good. I like Eminem, so I'll always say Eminem music is good. Yeah. All right, we're gonna
have no opinion.
Yeah. All right, so that's Venom. yeah, if y'all want to talk more about it, feel free to hit me up on Twitter or Instagram, whatever. Feel free to hit up Jamie, and we will have the full review with like an official rating and all that stuff on comicbook.com/Marvel tomorrow morning. And we can talk more about it throughout the weekend. Can't wait to see what you all think and hear everybody's reaction to the, I mean, people are not overhyping the post-credit scene. It's a pretty big deal. But let's move on to some news.
So, I have taken the responsibility of talking about the Marvel lawsuit of this week, which is the most complicated thing that I have ever seen oversimplified on Twitter. I was losing my mind on my day off just seeing people try to play this game of telephone of thinking what the lawsuit actually was versus what it actually is. And so I wanted to kind of talk about it here and kind of explain what all is going on. I am not a lawyer. I know very little about law, but I do know comic history and all of that. So I have my own separate sort of notes that I will dive into here. So in the Copyright Act of 1976, Congress gave artists the possibility to take back rights of previously licensed work after 35 years. You can kind of file a termination notice, and that will give you the possibility, if you created a work that another company owns, to renegotiate the terms of that deal. If it is a thing where you signed the deal and then that character became way popular than you had expected and you're entitled to more money, or if it's a thing of like, oh, I signed this deal and then you're not using this character and I want it back. And this also applies to rights that were assigned before 1978, as long as they were not made for hire, which is a thing that I will dive into here. So a bunch of Marvel creators and their various families have filed termination lawsuits recently, and then Marvel made headlines by filing a lawsuit to prevent them from doing so. And so this is relevant for Steve Ditko, who co-created Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, Don Heck, who co-created Iron Man, Black Widow, and Hawkeye, Don Rico, who co-created Black Widow, and Larry Lieber, who is the brother of Stan Lee, who co-created Iron Man, Thor, and Ant-Man. So they all filed their own termination lawsuits, and Marvel is trying to prevent them from doing so because they want to assert that they have full credit. And part of the thing that they are trying to argue is that copyright termination doesn't work if the work in question was made as work for hire, which is kind of a thing that has been thrown around in the comic industry a lot. Marvel in particular likes to tout that they have the Marvel method, which is a much more collaborative way of making comics and is kind of a bunch of people working back and forth to create a single issue. And so in their argument then, nobody is one sole creator and everybody is kind of involved. But part of the problem is that there isn't as much of a paper trail when it comes to the work for hire, whereas if you are somebody who has signed a work for hire contract in the past couple of decades, you might have some sort of contract that proves that that was what was outlined. That isn't necessarily the case if you were somebody who was working in the 60s or 70s and those documents are either gone or they may not have even been signed. This isn't the first time that this has happened. Jerry Siegel, who co-created Superman, his family tried to do the same with DC. And then Jack Kirby's family tried to do the same with Marvel in 2014. It almost went to the Supreme Court and then it was settled out of that and didn't quite go there. The one thing that is kind of key here, Marvel would not lose complete ownership of these characters despite everybody reporting and thinking as much. They would just have to share ownership and share the profits with these co-creators. And this only applies in the US. International rights are their own thing. I have seen speculation that people are like, could this technically mean that like Steve Ditko's family could take Doctor Strange and put him in a DC movie? Yes, that is technically possible, but I feel like that's a whole separate can of worms in and of itself. The thing that like frustrates me the most about this is that creators deserve credit and creators deserve to be paid. There have been comic creators who their characters are in billion-dollar movies and then they're over here launching GoFundMes to try to pay their hospital bills or try to just pay their normal bills. So all of the people who I have seen who are very pro-Marvel in this instance, I will just say you don't know the full situation and these creators deserve their credit. So does anybody else have any sort of comments or questions regarding this whole thing? I know I just...
Well, that was great. I feel educated. And I think you're so... Like people keep thinking, like, they're going to take away all the characters. That's not going to happen. The best tweet I saw comparing it to is Stephen King and how he's in charge of, you know, what gets adapted and that kind of stuff. And no one's taken away Spider-Man. Please stop. Like, we don't need to be rooting for corporations. Yeah. We should be rooting for artists.
Exactly.
And you, I'm really impressed with the way you just spit that. Everyone in the comments is like, breathe, Jenna, breathe.
I know. I was like, I could tell I was like not breathing in the middle of it, but it's like, this is something that I am so passionate about. If anyone else wants to also be angry about this, watch the Batman and Bill documentary that's on Hulu, because it deals with one of Batman's co-creators. And it is a whole like nice encapsulation of not getting credit and not getting ownership and the work for hire of it all. And it is something that I definitely recommend, because it will make you feel fired up about all of this. But yeah, it's this thing where like people don't understand what the situation is. And this is a thing that has kind of happened before. I know Spencer at our work said that it happened with John Carpenter and like Nightmare on Elm Street. So if you were to make a new movie, you would have to go to him directly. So it's like, there is a precedent for this. It's just people have extrapolated it into like, oh no, we're never going to get a Spider-Man or Doctor Strange thing ever again. And it's like, that's not really the case. Yeah.
I cannot say how much I wish I had Jenna around when I had to write this up for the site, because I was so confused. You know, the meme where like the reaction image where SpongeBob is reading the book and his eyes are going to two different pages and he's like struggling. That was me. I was like, man, I don't know. I went to school for English. I have no idea. I'm sure we're not going to have, because people were like freaking out. It reminded me of, did anybody else get this vibe? The day that the Sony Spider-Man deal expired and everybody was on Twitter losing their minds. It reminded me, I'm like, but then nothing happened. Like, it was all fine. Like, we freaked out for a good week and a half and then everything was cool. I don't think it, we're going to get to the point where they're going to be like, I'm like, did you just say like Doctor Strange could go over and make a DC? Like, no, that's not going to, going to happen. Like, everybody, we need to calm down, leave the weird multiversal shenanigans to Uatu and we'll all be fine. It's great.
Yeah. First of all, Jenna, bravo. Where do we send our tuition check is the best way to sum that up, which was in the comment section. Before today's show, I sent a message to everybody and said, does anybody understand this really thoroughly, or should I spend the next hour educating myself? And Jenna volunteered, and I'm glad she did, because I could not have delivered that as well as she did. That sums it up. Like Marvel's not going to lose these characters. They might just have to pay a little bit more money to these creators and their families, which, I mean, legally, I don't know if they're going to be required to, but morally, like, it's just like, just, you know, give them a few bucks there. Come on, because
you can afford it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I think like a comparison we could make would be like this podcast. Like if we left comic book and this podcast became very successful, you know, Viacom CBS isn't going to be like, yeah, here's some extra money for creating that podcast, but we did create it. You know, all four of us have been here from the beginning, but of course this isn't going to become Doctor Strange or Iron Man. And they're not going to make movies about this podcast, but I think that's just I get the legal aspect of it, I think, but I just think, and I hope that the creators and the families do get some extra cash from what we're all enjoying and what a corporation is benefiting from. But yeah, great job, Jenna. I'm not going to spoil Jenna's great work by continuing to run my stupid mouth. We're going to move on to the next bit of news.
Okay. So now in the bit of news that everybody wants to talk about, Thor: The Dark World. So in a recent conversation with Inverse, Alan Taylor says he wants to release his own Taylor cut of the much maligned Marvel movie. He said to them, I was cheering for Zack Snyder when he was doing that and thinking, will he pull this off? This is amazing. I think that every director was kind of rooting for that. I would love to. I mean, can you imagine that? They give me however many millions of dollars they gave him to go back in. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to get that phone call. I focused all my attention on making a certain movie. And then in the editing process, decisions were made to change it a lot. My regret was that the movie got released, was that it was changed a lot. I have a great fondness for some of the things that went away in the original cut, and there was a kind of quality, a wonder to the thing that was beautiful to me. So we're just going to have every director probably try and do this now. What are your thoughts on the movie that everybody loves to dunk on getting another cut?
First of all, Thor: The Dark World is not that bad.
Because they made it relevant, because they will not let it go. It's important in everything that's come since. So it feels good now because it matters, but that mattering does not a good movie make. Sorry.
I've only seen the movie once, so it's like I have no barometer, right? I guess I just saw it in theaters and I have not rewatched it since. But like, I know Alan Taylor has spoken about how like he was very depressed after making this movie and after it was released. So it's like, I feel for him. I completely commend wanting to release the Taylor cut. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think like I can totally understand making a movie in this big like franchise ecosystem and having it change so wildly from what Patty Jenkins initially had been brought in to do. So it's like I totally get him wanting to do his own thing. Like I'm all for it. It'll never happen, but I'm all for it.
So the question that go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I am going to stay away from saying never, because when we say never, things, the monkey's paw has curled numerous times in the last year, 2 years, however long you want to go back. I'm good. But yeah, I don't think it's probably going to happen. But I also think that Marvel's going to keep hitting that same button, JB. Like, they're never going to let us forget, like, no, it matters. You, even if you don't like it, so what? Go back and rewatch Thor: The Dark World before Endgame. Do it. Do it now. As Kevin Feige eats popcorn slowly in the background.
Here's the question that I saw on Instagram was, would you watch it or do you want it? Or do you want the Taylor cut of Thor: The Dark World? And I think I summarized my emotions on this the best in a comment on the comic book Instagram. I don't care, but I'd watch it if they released it. You know, I'm not going to be out here pushing the hashtag, but if it was there, and I was bored, which I often am, I'd watch it. All right, let's keep it moving.
All right, what's our next bit of news, you guys? Oh, goodness gracious. James McAvoy talked to our very own Jamie Lovett, our other Jamie here at comicbook.com, and about the idea of returning as Professor X. It's not looking good. This was his quote. He said, "I'm all about doing good stuff. And when I got asked to play Charles the first time, it was good stuff. It was good writing and I was excited. If people offer me good writing, I'm always going to be excited. But I do feel like I've had a good ending with Charles and I got to explore some really good stuff, particularly in the first two movies that I did for him as a character. So if my time is done, I'm happy with the time that I spent and the time that I was given. And if good writing comes in and people want to do stuff with me, I'll always be open to that, but it's got to be good." So I think Mr. McAvoy, like all of us, is aware that the first two of those X-Men movies are great, and then they start to teeter. It sounds like he'd be open to it, but I think it also sounds like he was being polite. That's, what do you guys think?
I wish this interview was on video. I don't know. I don't think it is, but I want to like listen to McAvoy's tone in this. Cause if he says like, "I'm all about doing good stuff," and when I got asked to play Charles this time, it was good stuff. But if he's like, "I'm all about doing good stuff," when I got asked to play Charles, it was good stuff. Like, you know, it's all about the tone. So it does seem easy to see that he is seemingly throwing some shade at the end of his X-Men run. Dark Phoenix was a movie.
It's my least favorite movie.
Ever?
Second to least. Joker gets that top
spot. Whoa, you haven't seen Chaos Walking.
You're right. That's fair. Whoa. I haven't.
Oh my God, I just pissed off Tom Holland Nation.
I know.
Jeez. But yeah, I don't think he'll come back, but yeah, I think he's throwing shade. Sorry, Jenna, what were you going to say about this?
No, I'm getting flashbacks to Jonathan Majors, like in the print interviews and like saying, "No, I'm not in Loki. Why would I, like, what is a Loki?" It's like you said, I feel like the context and the nuance here is kind of being lost. So, but yeah, I don't blame him for having this kind of outlook. I think the way that he worded it is much nicer than he could have. So, because yeah, Dark Phoenix and Apocalypse are not good.
No, they're not. All right. Anybody else want to weigh in on James?
I don't have a ton to say about that, except for the first thing I thought about, Jenna, was Jonathan Majors in that print interview. And I'm like, how dare you as a writer not tell me how he was standing? Was his hand jauntily on his hip? I need to know. So I guess I'm next. So apparently Sony's still trying to make that Sinister Six movie. On THR's Hero Nation podcast, they were talking about it. And there was a notion, some reporting of Sony's always kept, outside of the new Spider-Man stuff they're doing with the Disney/MCU, they've always kept their Marvel Universe stuff separate, Chris D'Alessandro. With this, like, Venom upcoming, like, Let There Be Carnage, they're actually trying to connect it to the Spider-Man universe, and they're setting up with the Disney MCU. I know one of their long-term goals is to make the Sinister Six, and that's the kind of project we're all waiting for, their version of the bad guys from the Spider-Man universe. We have heard so much about this Sinister Six thing. and seen so very, very little, except for what we're all sort of intoning from the next Spider-Man movie. What did you guys think when you guys saw this?
I mean, like, it's No Way Home, right? Like, No Way Home is that movie because you already have five of the six, and the sixth is either going to be like, I don't know, Rhino or Venom or somebody. Like, you have, like, they're basically, if they don't add a sixth and they just do a Sinister Five, and then all of a sudden we get another movie like a year or two from then that is an actual Sinister Six, it's going to feel kind of, yeah, or Vulture, as the comment section is saying. My money's on Venom. My money has been on Venom for a while. I think that Sony, I think like when that split between Spider-Man, like the Spider-Man deal led to the split between Sony and Disney, there was like the word like in the reporting was that Sony really wants Venom in these movies. And I think that they see the value that adds to the Venom franchise being a part of the MCU. So I definitely think No Way Home has to be this movie, but if it's not, yeah, sure. I'll watch another scene. I'll watch Spider-Man climb a tree. I don't care. Like at this point, Tom Holland Spider movies have been very good. So hopefully if they keep making them good, I'll keep watching.
Just give me Michael Keaton. If you put Michael Keaton in your movie, I'm going to go see it. That like literally like that's all I care about. This whole concept just means nothing to me, but if it includes Michael Keaton, I'm 100% on board.
I'm just like, I just remember sitting and watching Amazing Spider-Man 2 and just seeing like how hard they leaned into like, we are setting up the Sinister Six. And then it's like, all right, are you still going to try? Like, I commend the idea of being committed to this for like almost a decade at this point. So like, if they want to make a solo movie just about the Sinister Six, that's cool. But like, I feel like I'm content with what we're going to get at No Way Home.
I think there is a weird conspiracy theory, giant like pinboard thing to this as well, because I had the same reaction as Brandon. I was like, is it No Way Home Sinister Six movie? Like, what are we doing? What's going on? What's the real truth here? I need Charlie Day. We need to figure this out. I need Luigi. I need to figure it out.
I was about to say, you're about to get him in December 2022. Good thing Spider-Man is December this year, because how could he possibly compete with Chris Pratt Mario? My goodness. But yeah, honestly, a Sinister Six movie is something we all want, but I feel like we're getting the version of it this year, hopefully. But if not, could be cool down the line. All right, we got some extra bits of news here that I'm just going to run through really quickly, and then we're going to get into our What If Episode 8 deep dive. So really quickly, Ms. Marvel is confirmed for 2022. That happened right after last week's show. Chloe Bennett has said firmly she's not in Secret Invasion, and this is like such an easy quote that I actually believe her on it. Shang-Chi officially surpassed Black Widow at the domestic box office to be the biggest movie of the year in the United States. Not worldwide yet, might get there. But in the U.S., it is the biggest movie of the year. And not Marvel, but very exciting. Earlier today, The Book of Boba Fett released a poster, and it drops on December 29th, which is, I'm pretty sure, the last episode of Hawkeye. What a day. What a way to end 2021. We're coming in hot, 2022. Phase zero. The first phase zero of 2022. Got a lot to talk about. Woo! Yeah, we'll be there. All right. All right. We're going to take a one-minute break. We're going to re-energize. And when we come back, we're going to talk about What If Episode 8, full spoilers. If you haven't seen it yet, pause the show. Go watch What If and come back. Welcome back to Phase Zero, episode number 38. Can we just take a second? Episode 38. We only do this once a week. That means WandaVision premiered 38 weeks ago.
Oh, all right.
Wow.
38 weeks. We are just marching. Longest 2 weeks of my life. What If Episode 8 breakdown. We're going to run through it all. You know, we like to start with the reactions. Shout out to Layla, who has pointed out in the comments, we've been here for 38 weeks. I don't know who we is, but you have, Layla, and we love you for it. Aaron, you're at the top of the screen. Start us off. What'd you think of episode 8 of What If?
The first thing that I encountered this morning when logging on for work was Jim Viscardi losing his mind in our messaging service. And, he's right. It was really, really fun. I did like last week's. So I'm not like, oh, I don't like any levity. But it was sort of interesting to see like where everything is going.
Last week's episode sucked.
Wow.
It was my favorite one.
Oh, summoned, hey, look who it is. Summoned him.
Speak of Jim Viscardian, he should appear.
Dying to talk to Jim about
dying
this.
To talk. I'm going to leave all the Spader content over there.
Do you think, Jim, I'm going to, this is an honest question I'm going to ask you right now. Do you think it would be a dis, like, I want, if I were to call Ross right now, and he, do you think he'd be mad at me if he answered and I was like, I'm live on a show?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, he may. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. I should.
I mean, look, look, I love Ross Marquand, but his Red Skull is way better than his Ultron. Okay. Like that. And that's, and I'll just say that. But this was a perfect opportunity. Like, look, okay, sorry. Marvel has had two perfect opportunities to bring James Spader back. Could have brought him back in WandaVision. Didn't even need makeup. They could have just had him show up, like had him walk off the set of The Blacklist and show up, and he would have fit in costume-wise, right? Would have been fine. Then we have this, right? Not even, it's not even like, at first I thought, oh, well, if anything, they'll get Paul Bettany to like voice the Vision and maybe put it through like a modulator or something when he like goes full Ultron or something. No, they didn't even get Paul. They didn't even get Paul Bettany. They just let this one go. And that's it. But like I said, Ross Marquand, I think does a good Ultron. I think it's weird. It's weirder for me to hear the, not James Spader, but Ultron voice come out of the Vision when we've had so much Vision this year, basically. I mean, look, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't Paul Bettany voice Vision in the zombie episode? Mm-hmm. Like I'm almost positive he did. And so like, they can just say, oh, hey, by the way, can you just give me like an extra 20 minutes and just record these lines for the other episode of What If? But I mean, voice things aside, holy moly. This is the episode that I've wanted What If to be the entire time. Because this is the perfect blend of taking a story, turning it ever so slightly on its side, and going in a completely different direction. Like, this is one where, like, this does not tell the story, retell the story of Age of Ultron. It doesn't retell, you know, or anything else, really, right? Like, yes, you get some parallels. You get Hawkeye falling out of the sky instead of it being Black Widow and whatever. You know, insert Brandon Davis Black Widow joke here. But it's just one of those things where, but also it's part of an ongoing narrative now. Like, I understand that they had to, like, you know, they had to give us all of the other episodes theoretically to give us, you know, the Guardians of the Multiverse coming together to do a thing to now defeat Ultron. But I feel like the show could have done a better job setting that up, kind of like what we got last week where Ultron shows up, you know, at the end of that episode in a multiverse that kind of leads into that. But I'm now more, it's like next week's episode now becomes must-see TV, right? Because like this is a thing now where they've finally pulled together the threads, and we know, you know, that something else is going to, you know, going to happen here. And it's the first episode that didn't feel long either. Like, there were a few long parts, but in the episode, but like, it got through, and, you know, Ultron, you know, there, Thanos got jobbed by Ultron, and now we know who the strongest villain in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is. It's Ultron. It always should have been. Joss Whedon ruined him. I'll never forgive him for that, among other things.
Jamie, what did you think of this?
Well, as an episode, it was so, I'm like, we're like, finally, oh my God, finally, things are happening. Thank goodness, because it's been frustrating. But I tweeted this, and it's the same thing. The voices being different has not bothered me yet, but this, I'm with Jim. I would have given anything to have heard James Spader's voice. And it, I think a part of it, too, is because the role is a voice role. I think that makes it harder to accept, and partially just James Spader has the voice of a god, and
just those soft velvety tones.
Yeah. Or as my friends, I like to call him Jimmy Spades. And so that was disappointing. But other than that, what a great episode. And I missed last week. Apparently, we didn't like last week. I like to laugh because I like joy. So I enjoyed last week's episode. But it does getting better. Yeah, clearly you hate fun. But I love it. So, but that's where I'm at.
Jenna.
Everyone is just all over the place. We're all just listening to Jim on his like James Spader podcast in this little interlude here. Yeah, what I was going to say that Aaron and Jamie have been waiting in suspense for, and then we started our countdown and I got cut off, was we like in the essence of time accidentally like clicked through the, like we skipped the intro. And so I didn't know who was in this episode in the way that I normally do. And so when Ultron started talking the entire time, I'm just like, what is that? Because it's like, that is not, it's like, does James Spader have a cold or something? Because I could not figure out what was going on here. But I think Ross did a good job given the circumstances. It just is kind of jarring, especially hearing it come out of Vision's mouth. But like, outside of that, just the spectacle of the episode, the way that it kind of like paid homage to comic Age of Ultron, and then like that fight between Ultron and the Watcher is just such a like Jack Kirby bonanza of just like visuals. Man. And then we get Ultron basically galactusing a galaxy. Like, that was the coolest thing ever. So I hope that season two keeps this sort of energy, because this was just absolutely insane. Like, this was just beautiful to look at.
I want to say one thing. Ross did the voice of Ultron for the Avengers Damage Control VR experience. And in that, he sounded so much like James Spader that I didn't know it wasn't James Spader until afterwards when a producer told me. So I think it was a choice to have him be different. I don't know why, because I agree that the Ultron voice that we got to know in Age of Ultron would have been the only thing I think that would have made this episode better. My reaction is I loved this episode. I thought it was really, really fantastic. So I don't really know why they had him not do it, because I know anybody who's done the Avengers Damage Control VR thing, it was like a limited experience, one of the coolest things I've ever done. They know that Ross is capable of doing that voice. So it was very interesting to hear that. I was listening to it today and I was like, well, I wonder why. It felt like it kind of started getting less and less Ultron-y as it went on throughout the episode. So I'm not really sure why that happened. Oh, yes. I thought the same thing. J2E in the comment section. I thought Carol coming in was Nova, and I was so excited for you. When they were on Xandar and Carol came in, and I was like, no way. We're about to put Nova in one of these. Like, put it, I was like, well, Xandar's not the choice. This wouldn't even make sense. But I was hyped for a second, and it was Carol. So I was like, okay, that's still cool, but I wish it was Richard. But overall, my reaction is I love this episode. I thought it was fantastic. And I do think What If is probably going, unless this finale is really fantastic, I don't know that What If is going to be able to climb out from being the bottom of my rankings of the shows so far. But this episode was fantastic, and it certainly bumped it up more than any other episode has, because I really love the through line. I know some people are okay with kind of like these one-off stories and they enjoy them just as much as they enjoy any other story. I'm more invested in the overall stories with stakes, and this one really upped the stakes in a massive, massive way, just for the show itself. Like, not even the fact that, like, yes, this Ultron could interfere with like the main MCU and whatever. I thought that this was really, really, it was really good. It was.
And you got to see your hero Tony Stark die again.
Yo, I'm so tired of that. Quick, like, that was my biggest thing, honestly. When Tony Stark died, that was so early in this episode, I just started to think, like, this show is just, it's like just saying, here, look, we can kill all these characters over and over again, and you're going to like it. And no, I'm not. But then I ended up liking this episode. Anyway, I am tired of seeing Tony Stark die. Jim, those are notes on the rundown, okay? You're jumping the rundown. What happened to you? This is why you're always in jail.
I will say, before I watched the episode, I like accidentally opened Twitter and I saw Jim's tweet about like, this episode is everything I wanted What If to be. And then I saw Brandon's tweet of like, I'm sick of seeing characters I love die. And I was like, oh no. I was like, what am I getting into?
Well, so. I tweeted that I'm sick of seeing characters I love die. And somebody responded, it was like, you like Hawkeye? I was like, oh, I didn't even get to that part yet. So,
but that's why you stay on Twitter until you watch the episode.
I know. But in this episode, I very much liked Hawkeye. I thought that Hawkeye moment when he jumped down the pit that Bruce Wayne climbed out of in The Dark Knight Rises and took down all the Ultrons, that was Hawkeye's best moment under Marvel Studios' reign, in my opinion. I can't even think of anything that would compete with it, because Hawkeye, other than jumping off that building in the first Avengers movie and that cool slow-mo shot, and having a cool trailer with Haley Steinfeld, I don't really know.
Bootleg Bucky Hawkeye is, it definitely ranks up there for me as,
yeah, what's with that arm?
Favorite Hawkeye.
I was going to say, Green Arrow did it first, decades ago. And Hawkeye is just now catching up to losing his arm.
But Jenna, originally at heart, is a big DC writer and covers a lot of DC stuff. So when DC fandom rolls around, by the way, I'm using that Green Arrow reference as a plug for this. When DC fandom rolls around, you're all going to want to be following Jenna if you want to hear all about all the shows on CW, the DCEU, everything coming up. Jenna's your girl down there. So make sure you're following her. Oh, yeah, Jenna, you added something. I want you to point this out.
So when Ultron and Watcher are going through all the different universes, which, by the way, that was such a cool thing of, like, they're in Times Square and it just keeps changing to, like, Wakanda and everything else. President Steve Rogers was in one of them. He was on a TV behind there getting inducted. So I'm like, is that the Ultimate Universe? Are we just saying that that's a separate universe? Because that did technically happen in the Ultimate comics. So that was just an interesting little nugget.
I think it's the MCU being like The Simpsons, because Chris Evans is going to run for president.
Yeah.
I thought Thanos got squashed harder than Bianca Belair at SummerSlam.
Oh.
And I hated that at SummerSlam, and I hated that in this episode.
Yeah. Man, that to me, it was such a it was a fairly bizarre choice, right? I get it, like, at this point that Vision/Ultron has basically destroyed the whole world, and so he's theoretically a stronger Ultron, but it's still, all he's got is the Soul Stone in his head,
right?
So, like, he could have just done the same thing. I do love the fact that he was cut perfectly in half, fairly balanced, just as Thanos would want. Just as he would want. But
Thanos' controller died. Like, he just stood there. Like, what happened? I don't know. I thought that they could have just given us a cool action scene there, I think, but it probably wasn't in the budget. They couldn't get Josh Brolin to voice it again for one more episode.
It's like a small undercurrent in all of these shows to be like, you guys need to stop freaking out about the Infinity Stones and Thanos. We're going to undercut it as many times as we possibly can. We're going to kill Iron Man. We're going to undercut all of it. And I'm like, oh, but he's supposed to be so freaking cool. Like, oh, well, he did get squashed real quick. He was on screen for like, what, maybe 6 seconds? Right? Maybe, if that, because I was having trouble. I had to write this up for the site. I tried to get a screenshot of him not Swiss cheese, and it didn't exist. There was one frame, and it was it.
I thought for a second when Thanos emerged into this onto the frame that this was going to be like he looks down and gets bit in the ankle by a zombie, and then that takes us to the zombie universe. I was like, oh, interesting. They're going to tie this in. Psych. Split. down the middle.
Not to make a reference from like a year ago, but they were trying to see if it was cake or not.
Oh, hey.
Split him in half. Is Thanos a cake? Is he not? Nope. He's just fallen in half.
I mean, yeah, that's.
It took me a second
to realize what you meant. And then
all of that whole time when every time you went on the internet, it was just like, let's cut something in half and see if it's a cake or not.
Is it a dog or is it a cake?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a dog. I don't want to see that one.
No.
Jesus.
But yeah, also I did, I mean, speaking of earlier, Jim said I make Black Widow jokes. It was nice to see kind of the roles reversed for a second. Yeah, I got some Endgame vibes when Hawkeye slipped through, but you know, I'm tired of seeing characters die. All right. Stop pushing me.
Is it me or did Natasha seem like way more jokey? In almost out of character kind of
confused
way.
About that. Because in the beginning, she like says, she's like, I'm not one to make puns. And while she doesn't make any puns, she goes on to be like Ms. Comedian.
Yeah.
I didn't like mind it, but it's like, why set up the fact that you're not about puns and then like make dumb jokes for 30 minutes?
I didn't mind it though. I thought like the bit with the shield was really cute. Like, I don't know. I like happy Natasha. Like, that was such a weird context to put it in, but I was like, all right, she's happy for like 2 seconds. So I'll take it.
Natasha thrives in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
The Watcher versus Vision Ultron.
Glorious Kirby Crackle, man.
What should we call Vision Ultron?
Ultravision.
Ultravision. I remember Ultravision downloads or whatever they were called. Ultraviolet. Never mind. I don't remember Ultravision. I like Viztron. It's just, how do you spell it? I don't know. It's terrible. Anyway, that fight with the Watcher and Viztron, Ultra Vision, whatever the hell you want to call it, Infinity Stone Tron, was awesome when Uatu pulled out the gold armor and everything. I loved it. I think that's the only reason we didn't get Ultron versus Thanos, because we got this fight instead.
It was a good one. Like, I was thinking about, like, it was so gloriously colorful. Mm-hmm. I mean, you throw in the Kirby Crackle and all that stuff, but like, it was just so creative in a way that, like, look, unless you're like a diehard comics fan, you don't know what the Watchers are capable of or what they can do or whatever. And this was a great way to kind of show that. And there is 1,000, like, I'm now convinced more than ever that we're getting live action Jeffrey Wright as, you know, as the Watcher somewhere, because it has to happen now. And it was just so, so cool to see for, you know, especially, I mean, you knew it had to happen at some point, because how many times can the Watcher say, I can only watch. Watching is what I do. But I love like the dig that Ultron makes at the Watcher. He's like, he goes, all you do is watching. And I'm not gonna lie, it's a little creepy. Like, yeah, the Ultron's saying what we're all thinking. It's totally, totally a little creepy. But man, it went full Kirby today with that stuff. I mean, the armor, the like I said, the Kirby Crackle, but like the way that the powers were showcased, like, absolutely love that.
I'm just so excited that Jeffrey Wright is doing things, like getting something cool to do, because I just love him so much. And it was so fun to watch him like have some more personality, which, you know, understandable. He's been stoic. That's part of who that character is. But in this episode, to watch him like not know what was going on and then to fight. And I'm just, I hope you're right about the live. If we get live action Jeffrey Wright, yes, please.
Like, suit of armor has to be in live action. Like, that would just look so cool.
I love that there's no helmet it. Big enough for Uwatu's
I know.
Head.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, that's going to be dope. I did see a comment. It's too far back now, but somebody thought they saw Mustafar in the episode. Like, and we've seen other Star Wars, like, kind of Easter eggy things, like in Loki. Didn't we see an X-Wing or some sort of?
That's interesting.
And so, I don't know. Maybe Disney's just like, yeah, they do kind of coexist. I'm ready for Baby Yoda get killed off in next episode of What If.
Okay, too far, Brandon.
I know.
Yo, they just kill everyone. Nobody's safe. They kill them all. Hate it. Love it. Hurt me. The end of the episode had Strange Supreme return, tying it all up in a bow, I think. So let's I guess, make predictions for this finale. First of all, do we think it's going to end? Like, do we think this story will have an ending? Or are we just going to be left here open-ended for maybe Multiverse of Madness or What If Season 2 that we know is coming? What do you guys think, Ari, at the top? Do you think this will have a satisfying story arc conclusion?
I would hope so, because I am still reeling, because Loki did have an ending, but not really. And, you know, they did the Rick and Morty. We'll see you in like a year, year and a half. Like, who knows at the end of it? So I would like something more concrete, because, you know, it's part two is probably not coming out in 2022. But the all the talking around this sounds like it's not like that's not the end of the train. And why would it be? You know, so I think we get a nice group shot. They save the day. And then something comes looming in off the side to kind of signal what's coming in season two.
Jamie, what do you think?
Oh, you know how much I love predicting things. yeah, I don't know. I hope that I like this episode finally ties stuff together. Keep giving me that. I don't mind a cliffhanger. I'm patient. I have high hopes for this final episode. This was the first episode that made me be like, yeah, we're in it. So, but I don't know what's going to happen, and I don't pretend to know.
Jenna, hit us with the prediction.
I agree with Aaron. I feel like there's going to be an ending, but then at the same time, whatever we get will absolutely just crescendo into Multiverse of Madness into season two. Like, I hope with season two that we don't just get straight retreads of existing movies. I hope we keep this momentum of just like big, crazy, like Jim said, kind of turning a concept on its side and then just running with it into something completely different, because that seems to be the show's like strong suit.
Jim, you have 30 seconds.
Never mind.
Never mind. Listen, we could have been here till tomorrow if Jim gave a prediction.
James Spader comes back. He voices everybody.
And then Moon Knight just took up. Jim. There we go. I think that it's definitely going to leave an open-ended ending, probably. I like the idea that it's going to wrap this up and then something else will show up. But I also think, really, I think, like, some characters will be set up for obvious appearances in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I think especially one of them is going to be Captain Carter. And I think we'll see the kind of like, oh, well, you know, maybe we'll see like a Blue's Clues type of thing where Doctor Strange shows up and he's in live action and he's surrounded by animation and he pulls into the live action world or something. I don't know. I'm losing my mind. Anyway, that's my prediction, that it's going to be open ended but still hopefully satisfying. Is there anything else you guys want to talk about today?
The chat is saying happy birthday, Eleanor. So I'm gonna shout that out.
happy birthday to Eleanor. I will relay your love to Eleanor, everybody. I hope she's working today on her birthday. You hate to see it, but we're going to Disney World tomorrow, so
nice.
You know, that's okay. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we get to go on Rise of the Resistance. Never been on it. If anybody has
the greatest ride in the whole world. Ever.
That's what I'm hearing. If anybody has any tips on how to get on Rise of the Resistance, we only have one shot at it, I think, because we land at like 9:30 a.m. and we're going straight to the park. And I think we only have like that noon app opportunity thing. So if anybody has any tips, we'd love to hear it, because I'm going to be real upset. Her birthday will be ruined and my day will be too. So
real pressure there, Disney.
I know.
Hurry up, Disney. Make it happen. All right. Anyway. So is there anything else about What If or Marvel or anything we want to talk about before we wrap up today's show?
I have a slightly off topic thing to say. And it's, as you know, I was unavailable last week because I was too in my emotions about WandaVision losing all those Emmys. And I will say that I binged Mare of Easttown yesterday because I had to know. I had to know if those women deserve to beat those women. And all I'll say is that I do believe that Kate and Julianne gave award-worthy performances, but I still think it should have been Elizabeth and Catherine. And if you want more details, follow me on Letterboxd, because I wrote a whole lot about it last night on Letterboxd. But I just had to say that I am now in the know on Mare of Easttown. I have watched it, and no one will be surprised to learn that I'm still Team WandaVision 100%.
Yeah, I was pretty shocked by the lack of awards for WandaVision, but you know, happy for the winners, sad for the losers, and surprised, honestly. Jenna, how was the 3-hour Bachelor in Paradise?
Oh, it was. I feel like I lost all sense of time and space. Like everything, the amount of like people who were together at the start of the episode and not at the end of the episode was just insane. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts whenever you watch it.
I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
So I gotta get through the 3 hours. And Aaron, basketball season's coming back. I'm just getting everybody's personal off topic here. You know, what are you getting excited for that the NBA is finally getting everybody back into? They got their player rules in place. You got the Kyrie Irvings of the world, who, you know. But are you ready?
I'm excited. You know, like there's not enough sports on. because NFL season's still going on too. I've now made it a thing. I have to go to a Titans Browns game at some point with you and Richard. We have to go.
Let's go.
Go and see it with you guys.
Tighten up, baby. Tighten up. Titans are on fire. I got to root for the Titans because Lord knows my Gamecocks. Jeez, when I talk about South Carolina, like my Southern comes out. Lord knows my Gamecocks. Oh, my God. Let's delete that from the show. But, yeah, my South Carolina boys are having a tough couple years. So it's all about the Tennessee Titans for me right now. Anyway. That is enough off topic, that more off topic than anybody here ever wanted to handle. If you guys want to talk more, reminder, we have Andy Serkis on the podcast next week. This interview is super fun, and I hope you all enjoy it very much. If you go see Venom, Let There Be Carnage this weekend, we would all love to hear from you. Blow up our mentions with your thoughts on the movie. Tell us if we're wrong. Tell us if we're right. All those kind of things. I love celebrating these things. If you take pictures of the theater, send them our way. We'll throw you that RT because I love celebrating this stuff with you guys. Follow Jenna at Hey, It's Jenna Lynn. Follow Aaron at Summit Lake Hornet. Follow Jamie at Jamie Cinematics. Don't follow me. It's a waste of time. Thanks for the quarantine watch party last night, everybody. It was a ton of fun. We have another one in 2 weeks, and I'll see you on episode 39 of Phase Zero 1 week from today. Later.